is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are coming to you live after the Raptors-Bucks Game 4 debacle from Milwaukee's point of view and quite a great game from Toronto's point of view. Jay, what's your thoughts there?
Well, before the game happened, I sent you a tweet that I saw Irvin Magic Johnson tweet. He was getting his skinny popcorn ready for Milwaukee versus Toronto. He said he was going to go with sea salt and pepper. Your thoughts on that?
I believe I responded with the fact that that was some tremendous insight from Magic Johnson there. And hey, popcorn is popcorn, and you got to know what your flavoring is going to be going into it, or you could be in trouble.
You know, he probably would have gotten fined if it wasn't for no longer working for the Lakers. So it's a good thing he quit the Lakers.
Should have shared some of the popcorn with the Bucks. I'm not sure what flavor popcorn they were eating, but I know it was stale.
It was. You know, I will say, Giannis came out and he looked like he was trying to be assertive and going, you know, I think he had 8 points in the first quarter in the paint, which he only had 10 all of game one. And then it was like he disappeared. And, you know, Kyle Lowry, once again, defying our expectations from him, actually, you know, showed up. I sent you a text. He had 12 points in the first 5 minutes of the first quarter. And, you know, he's actually looked competent the last few games.
Lowry's been good. I mean, the difference in these games in Toronto versus the games in Milwaukee has been, well, I guess in the last game in game three, it was the fact that Giannis and Middleton and Bledsoe, primarily in my mind, Bledsoe, were just not very good.
Bledsoe was so bad.
He was horrific in game three, not just the way he played, but just the shot selection and the times when he chose to try to do things was just terrible.
And Bledsoe looked like the guy in pickup basketball when you watch him play, and he's like, that's the guy I don't want to be on his team. That's what he looked like in game three.
He was just a guy who looked like he had no idea of game situations, and combined with how he was playing, it's like, dude, you're having a horrible game. Why are you taking shots 4 seconds into the 24-second shot clock? It was just that was unfathomable. And all that being said, they still had a really good chance to win that game, and disappointed, obviously, especially after tonight, that they didn't get it. Tonight, it was a totally different story. Tonight, it was just the bench of Toronto versus basically no production from anybody except for Middleton and Giannis. And that was a game that really has me, I guess, thinking twice about what the Bucks are or can be in the next series. I still think they got 2 out of 3 at home. They obviously didn't look good tonight, and they didn't look very good in game three, although not as bad as tonight. But I just, those were two performances that if you're going to really be able to compete with Golden State in the next round, you got to win one of those two games.
There's zero chance, Mike. No, neither of these teams is competing with Golden State. Golden State might as well be ready to celebrate the 3-peat. You can start planning that parade now. There's no doubt in my mind it's over. It's over. The season's over. Mark, chalk it up. You know, I just don't think there's any way that either of these teams that we saw play these four games, you know, I just don't see them being able to compete with Golden State, even with or without Kevin Durant. I don't think it matters. And quite frankly, you know, we think we can debate this in a few minutes here, but I think the Golden State looks better without Durant. So I don't think there's any chance either of these teams beats Golden State. I just don't.
Tonight put a serious dent in my belief that Milwaukee could compete with them. I just think that they've been very, very good defensively throughout the entire year. And tonight, they just got shredded. It just didn't look like they could do anything that they needed to do in order to be able to stop, heck, Toronto, who has nobody near the caliber of players and teamwork and passing that Golden State's going to throw at them. And, you know, they put Giannis a little bit tonight on Kawhi, and that worked, and Kawhi gave the ball up, but the other guys really played well. Norman Powell had another great game, shot the ball well. Van Vliet, you know, banked in a three and had a couple baskets, which was more than what he's given him
Ibaka,
before.
Ibaka looked really good.
Ibaka was good tonight. Gasol was good tonight. I mean, they got a lot of support from those guys that are not normally who you would expect to come through. So But man, I just don't. I look at Milwaukee tonight, and just where are they? Like, they just, even Giannis to a certain degree. I mean, you see, as great as he is, you'll still see in the play, you know, in playoff basketball, you see some of his faults, and the fact that he can't shoot just makes it so much more difficult.
He had a three tonight, Mike.
He did, but you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
It makes it so much more difficult for him to go to the basket. And I don't know. I still, if I think about what I try to do here is, and this is what I find myself doing, is trying to compare this Bucks team to the last several iterations of the Cavs and think about how they compare, so that when we start talking about how do they match up, can they beat the Warriors? And one of the things that I really liked, again, prior to tonight's the way that the Bucks looked, but prior to tonight, I kind of felt like they had enough perimeter defenders that if you throw out there Giannis and Middleton, Bledsoe, Brogdon, and who am I forgetting?
George Hill?
Yeah, and George Hill. You've got enough guys now where you can kind of defend the death lineup, where there's not a glaring mismatch at any one of those positions. I mean, obviously, Thompson and Curry are better than whoever you're going to put on them, but it's not a tremendous mismatch in terms of size and quickness and athleticism. But wow, I just, after looking at what Toronto did to him tonight, with obviously a much lesser supporting cast and a much lesser team than what Golden State's going to throw out on the floor, I'm just not sure. I mean, to me, Toronto is basically Kawhi,
and who's injured, by the way.
Right.
He's clearly hampered. He's the body language and the fact that Nick Nurse just, let's just play him. We're up 19 points. Let's keep him put him back in the game. I guess it doesn't make any sense to me. You just have a guy who's hurt, who's clearly struggling running up and down the floor, and you're relying on him to do a lot on the basketball floor, and you put him back out there. I just don't understand it. The rationalization that I don't know. I didn't listen to the press conference, but I can't believe that no one's going to sit there and not ask him, why did you put Kawhi back out there with up 17 or 19 points? It doesn't make any sense.
I still think if you're Nick Nurse, that's a game obviously you have to have. Milwaukee shoots a ton of threes, and not that they were going to come back. They really didn't show any sign of life after, I don't know, maybe 4 minutes into the second half. You kind of felt like it was over. I just felt like Milwaukee didn't play with a sense of urgency from guy one all the way down to guy 12. It just didn't seem like, man, we have to win this game. Whereas that was the feeling that you got out of Toronto. And that was a little disappointing, especially, like I said, coming from Giannis. I just don't think that, I don't know what his final stat line was, but he just didn't do as much as you would have wanted a potential MVP candidate to, you know, and probably going to be the MVP. I wanted more out of him tonight than what I got in what I think was a crucial game. You win that one, and I think the series is over, and now you go back to Milwaukee and take care of business, and suddenly you're going into the finals off a gentleman's sweep. And now, boy, you're in a dogfight, and who knows? I still think the Bucks have too much for the Raptors because I just don't know. I don't know. Kawhi, as good as he's been, I think Toronto is still relying on guys who I'm not sure that your Norm Powells and your Fred VanVleet and even Ibaka, I'm not sure you're going to get the same level of production out of them in Milwaukee that you're going to get out of them here. And I know you've probably seen the stat, but Milwaukee, that was only the second time all year they've lost two in a row, and they didn't lose three in a row the entire season. So you got to take that if you're Milwaukee, that's a pretty good sign. Two out of the last three at home, but my confidence in their ability to compete with Golden State was definitely shaken tonight.
So you saying six games or seven games, Mike, for Milwaukee?
Whew, man. I mean, if you'd asked me before tonight, I would have said five. So I don't know. I still think they're better. I still think that, you know, the game the other night, their best players didn't play well. And again, maybe I'm delusional, but I'm still going to go with Milwaukee in six.
I agree. I think let's keep the whole Toronto losing in six situation going. I like it. So let's keep it up.
All right. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't think Toronto, let's put it this way, whatever minuscule chance we're giving the Bucks to compete against Golden State, which you're giving them 0% chance. I'm not ready to take it down to zero, but I certainly feel way less confident right now than I did 4 hours ago. But I still think that they have Toronto has less than a zero chance. There's no way that they compete. Toronto could easily get swept, whereas I don't think Milwaukee's going to get swept.
Yeah, I think the big thing that Milwaukee would have in its favor going against Golden State is, for once, Golden State wouldn't have home court advantage. And I really think that's the only reason Milwaukee will win a game.
And I still think defensively that they present some at least challenges to Golden State, in that they can, if they need to, I think they could switch across five positions if they have to. They've got enough long athletic guys that can defend. So I think that's a plus. I do think that, sort of like the Houston model, because they shoot so many threes, the math says that there's going to be a game or two where they hit 45% of those 40 threes that they're going to take. And in games where they do that, especially at home, there's going to be a chance they're going to beat. And then you look at, I mean, I know Golden State finished off Portland in four games, and so let's kind of transition over to that. But in the last three games, Portland was at one point up 17. And I think the Bucks, despite what they showed tonight, are better. I mean, they're much better defensively than Portland is. And I think if the Bucks get up 17, I'm not sure that the Warriors come back as easily. Now, that's not to say that they can't come back, because we've experienced it for 3 or 4 years that no lead is safe and they can put together a 15-2 run in the blink of an eye. But I think against Milwaukee, that's tougher to do. I think Milwaukee's better defensively. And like I said, because they shoot so many threes, it provides that variance that Daryl Morey of the Rockets likes to talk about, that, you know, you bang home a bunch of threes and it just gives you an opportunity to win games that maybe you otherwise wouldn't. So I give the Bucks a slight chance to at least compete and make it interesting. Whereas, like I said, I don't think the Raptors can do anything, because I know you mentioned it earlier, the Warriors with versus without Durant. And we talked about in the last podcast that they're way more fun to watch this version, with the cutting and the passing and the screening and all the things that they do that they did when they were, you know, in 15, 16. And with Durant, they just, it's not the same. But I don't know. The question is, you think that even if Durant doesn't come back, which obviously everybody's assuming that he's going to be back for game one, but let's just say that he didn't come back, do you think that that makes it more likely, less likely? It doesn't matter that Durant's there if they're playing Milwaukee.
I don't think it matters, to be honest with you. I think he'll play if he gets ready to go. It's the NBA Finals, and if he's not ready to go, he won't play. I don't think it matters if it's Milwaukee or Toronto. I don't think it has any bearing whatsoever.
I think if Durant's not there, I think then you have to look at Golden State and say, okay, that at least gives Milwaukee a better chance to kind of swing the matchups and figure out who's going to guard who. And, you know, does Draymond take Giannis? And if he does, then that kind of takes him out of the quarterback role. If you don't put Draymond on him, do you put Klay Thompson on him? Looney? I don't know who plays him if Durant's out. Obviously, if Durant's in there, you got to think that Durant's going to spend a lot of time guarding Giannis, which makes for an interesting matchup. I think that I think Golden State would be much better in that series with Durant as opposed to without. Just not so much from the offensive side of the floor.
Defensively?
I think defensively, having Durant in there to be able to contend with Giannis makes a big difference.
Yeah. So just to kind of break down Golden State-Portland real quick, I was impressed with Portland in all three games that they were competed. Obviously, the first game kind of – I think the first game was closer than the final score indicated, because the first three quarters, I think Portland was in the game, and then it kind of got away from them late in the third and then beginning of the fourth, and then that game was over. But I felt like games 2, 3, and 4, Portland really dictated the pace and had a chance to. They had a chance to win all three of those games.
If you would have got a regular season Lillard average, I think that Portland easily wins one or two of those games if Lillard is at even, like I said, regular season level, and he wasn't. He was way below. I think I saw where he shot like 38% from the field. and turnovers, and just he just didn't play well. He did not play well in that. He did not play well in that series. And obviously, when your best guy isn't up to the level that you need him to be, you're not going to beat a historically great team like Golden State. You're just not. And you know, they got some good performances. Obviously, the Myers Leonard 25 points and a half was kind of ridiculous, but those things happen, you know, like Norman Powell getting 24 points. Those things happen. And when they do, hopefully your team's in position to be able to take advantage of them and, you know, sneak out a victory. But Portland just couldn't close. They needed Lillard to close games, and he just wasn't up to the task in the series.
So Saturday night, I spent all day Saturday. I was at the PGA Championship at Beth Page Black, and my dad and I got to the hotel Saturday night, and I told him I wanted to watch Golden State Portland, and he said, why? I was like, well, I kind of like basketball, Dad. And he's like, well, I haven't watched – he says – his words to me were, I've watched three games all season since the Cavs aren't good. So my dad's an atypical Fairweather fan. Anyways, so I said, well, can we watch Golden State Portland? And he's like, yeah. And we watched the first half, and he's like, well, I'm going to bed. And I'm like, well, I'm going to keep watching it. And he's like, well, hopefully Portland holds on and keeps it going. And then we get through the third quarter starts, my dad's sound asleep, I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, this is not going to go well. I could just tell the whole momentum changed, and like you said, Dame looked completely, like, absent, like, from the whole situation, and I'll be honest, the second Golden State took the lead, I turned it off because I knew it was over. I was like, it was as soon as that 17-point deficit went away, I knew it was over. And, you know, last night I stayed with it and watched the whole thing. You and I were texting last night, and we could have lots of discussions about what went wrong last night. But I think that the text I sent you was the biggest thing was you put Golden State in foul trouble with 6.5 minutes left. You were in the bonus and you shoot one free throw the rest of the game. That's inexcusable. I don't care what level of basketball you're playing. That's 100% inexcusable. You put a team like Golden State in foul trouble in the fourth quarter in a close game, and you don't take advantage of it. And I'm not saying they would have called all the fouls, because obviously they were letting some things go last night at the end of the game, but it was both ways, I felt. I just think that I don't exactly know.
I think Portland,
that was on the coaching. That was on the coaching there, in my opinion. I don't know.
Well, I think Portland had checked out. I think the players had checked out, maybe not consciously, but I think subconsciously, I'm not sure that they felt going into that game that they could win, especially psychologically. They had to know that they had been up by 17 in the previous two games. And so if you get up 17 and you're still looking over your shoulder, just wondering when that run is going to come, that's not a good way to go into the game psychologically. And you know, that's had to be what they're thinking. And I think you made a great point when you said, as soon as Golden State took the lead, you went to bed, because I'm watching that game, and as you could just see, as they're coming back, Portland, just their body language, their energy, you could just see it on their faces and in their body that they're like, man, it's just not going to happen. And it was weird. Like, I felt like the Portland crowd was really dead. Maybe they just didn't have the microphones close enough to the crowd to pick up the noise, but it just felt like that crowd had no energy at all, which is atypical of a Portland crowd. And I think that just, I think the collectively players, the fans, just didn't really believe that they could win. And again, rightfully so. I don't think there was anybody really that believed that they were going to win that game or win the series. And so it just kind of, I think it just took a psychological toll on them that, God, we got up 17 on these guys. We got up 19 on these guys. And still with all that, we can't close them out. And I think they were just psychologically beaten by, you know, the Golden State mystique, for lack of a better way to put it. And I know, as a Cavs fan, there were times I felt that way, especially in the last two finals, I guess, with Durant in there. It just felt like it was inevitable that a run was going to come or the big play was going to be made. And it always feels like, and I think this is what the Bucks or the Raptors, whoever gets there, will face, is Golden State just scores so easily. And you have to work so, so hard to be able to score. And that's kind of how I felt about this Raptors-Bucks series. The first two games, it felt like Milwaukee just scored so easily. They were able to break down the defense and get them spread out and either penetrate and get layups or get easy kickouts for threes, whereas Toronto was just like Kawhi dribbling at the top, dribbling, and then either shooting the ball himself or kicking it to somebody else for a really, really difficult shot. And that was the formula for Milwaukee in the first two games. And then in the last two games, I don't know, they just weren't as good defensively. And, of course, some of those role players made shots that they weren't making in those first two games. And ultimately it comes down to shots go in or shots don't go in. And obviously you can make the defense – the defense can make those shots tougher with better closeouts and, you know, getting to shooters and that kind of thing. But ultimately, if Norman Powell hits two or three open threes that he misses in Milwaukee, that's 6 or 9 points that stops a run or continues a run. And whew, I don't know. It's just, I think you have to, you know, you have to look at what's going to transpire in the next game and say, okay, if we go back to Milwaukee, which team are we getting on both sides of the ball? You know, what are you going to get from Milwaukee? What are you going to get from Toronto? And I just think that it'll be interesting to see what happens in that game.
Yeah, I agree. I think, obviously, I think the future in Portland is I don't know if you want to talk about the implications of what this means for the team, but I don't know. I think Lillard and McCollum have a few more years on their contracts, correct? I think Portland's pretty much, you know, I don't want to say they're going the Atlanta Hawks route, but they're kind of stuck with where they have. I don't know that they're going to have a lot of cap space, and it'll be interesting to see. Like, I know Rodney Hood's a free agent, and I know
I think Myers Leonard's a free agent.
Myers Leonard's a free agent. I'm assuming Evan Turner is a 1-year deal, so I'm assuming he's a – oh, no, he was paying mucho dinero.
Yeah, he was the summer of 2016, so I think he's still got one. I think he's still got one more year. I mean, if you're Portland, you're banking on Nurkic coming back and him being arguably probably your third best player, but I think during this regular season he may have even played better than CJ. I'm not sure CJ had a great regular season. And so you're banking on the fact that Nurkic comes back and now you've got your whole team intact. Maybe Durant leaves, the landscape of the league changes, and all of a sudden now you bring back Nurkic, you bring back Lillard and McCollum, and then, you know, whatever peripheral guys, whatever they end up doing there. And now you're back into, you know, you're back in contention. And obviously you got to the Western Conference Finals, so theoretically you made the Final Four. You know, you're one of the four best teams in the league. And so, let's face it, we've tried to compete with Golden State for 4 years, and, you know, the Cavs got one. And I'm not sure that Toronto or Milwaukee is going to take another one away from them. So you've got a historically great team that's going to have been to the finals 5 straight years and probably win 4 out of those 5 finals in all likelihood. So, you know, how much can you say, oh, we got to totally retool and break this up in order to beat that team? Good luck with that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
All right, so last thing, we'll probably come back at some point with some more Bucks Raptors talk in the future, but I know we talked about it right off the top with Magic. Just, it seems like the Lakers whole thing is just a train wreck. Nobody knows who's in charge, nobody knows who's what or who trusts anybody. And it's just I guess my take on it is, it looks like, from, if you're LeBron, you just wonder what his thought process is and the whole thing. And I know he's not going to probably ever come out and say what he thinks, because that's just not his style, but
he'll subtweet it though.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you'll know how he feels about it in terms of, is he feeling good? Is he feeling bad? What's his take on it? But you're never going to know the details. You're not going to get a sit down 10 minutes of, hey, this is what I think of Magic, or this is what I think of Palinka, or this is what I think of Genie Buss. That's never going to happen. And that would be the interesting thing, to see where he's at right now.
Did you see any of the Vogel press conference yesterday? Did you see any of it?
I know they were talking to him about Kidd. And,
well, there was a question that was asked that was directed at Palinka, and I think it was Dave McMenamin, which would make it even better, but I'm pretty sure Dave McMenamin asked Palinka, you know, we know that Frank Vogel wasn't your guy's first choice because you talked to Ty Lue and yada, 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 Monty Williams, and then you got Frank Vogel. So can you explain what went wrong in those things? And this, the Frank Vogel facial expression, someone zoomed in on his face during the question. It was pretty good. But what was even better was someone, I don't know if you ever watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, but the theme song for Curb Your Enthusiasm, someone put the theme song to Curb Your Enthusiasm with his facial expressions and the question being asked, and I was laughing so hard. It was really, really funny. I just think that's a train wreck. And like LeBron was standing there during the whole press conference, and there's Kurt Rambis and all these other people, and obviously the whole. It couldn't have been coincidental that Magic showed up on First Take that day, the day they were doing the Frank Vogel press conference, and he talked about Pelinka stabbing him in the back and saying, oh, the final straw was they weren't going to let me fire Luke Walton. I wanted to be the one to do it. And like, it's a bunch of semantics. I don't know. I just think, like you said, the Lakers are a train wreck, dumpster fire. Who knows what's going to happen? And quite frankly, if I'm any free agent and I'm looking at their situation, I don't know that I want to go there. I just don't know. And there's very – someone's going to go there. Let's be honest. Someone's going
to
go there.
There was some Durant to the Clippers buzz tonight on Twitter. I don't know if you saw any of that, but no. I'm not sure where it came from, but there was definitely
– Could you imagine if that happened? Could you imagine if that happened and you've got LeBron on the Lakers and you've got Durant on the Clippers, and automatically the Clippers are going to be the team and the LA that everyone's going to talk about. And again, the Lakers will be overshadowed. In my opinion, that's what would happen.
All right. So let's end with this question. It is now October of 2020. Is LeBron James a member of the Los Angeles Lakers? I say no. I say if this next year, I would anticipate it not going well this offseason. I would anticipate them not being able to get much done, which means you're going to suffer through another season where unless Lonzo and Brandon Ingram are going to suddenly become superstar players, which I'd say is fairly unlikely, that you're looking at best at a mediocre season for the Lakers. I just can't see LeBron saying those last 2 years of my contract, I'm going to be happy just playing out the string. I think he starts agitating for a trade come the end of next season if things aren't going well, and by the summer of 2020, he's out the door.
Here's going to be my answer. I'm going to say yes, a hesitant yes, and the only reason I'm going to say yes is because, and I'm not going to go into my Space Jam theory, Mike. I'm not going to go there.
You're a buyer of Lakers mystique.
No, I think. And right now, I don't know what's going to happen in the offseason. As much as I want to say that I don't think the Lakers are going to land anyone, I think that someone's going to go there. It might be someone as small, and I don't want to keep slighting Kemba Walker here, Mike. I apologize, Kemba, but if someone decent goes to the Lakers, I think they're competitive, and maybe you can chalk it up to some progress. I know LeBron's only got he's got very little time left, so to speak. So I don't know how happy he would be with a first round exit or a second round exit, but I'm just thinking I just don't think there's any chance that he gets traded maybe in his last year of his contract. I could buy into it, but I don't know if next year he'll get traded. So I'm going to say he's still a member of the Lakers, and we'll see. Maybe I'll change my tune after free agency's over, and we can have a discussion at that point. But
we got to start charting our predictions. I think that's the next thing we have to do. Let's get one of our listeners to chart our predictions for us.
Chart our predictions. Well, listen, I just pull all the ones that I know I did right, and I count those, and then I don't talk about any of the other ones.
Let's focus on the positive. Well, I will say that we both had Bucks Warriors at the beginning of the playoffs, and I still feel fairly confident that that's going to happen, although I'm not nearly as confident that that's going to be a competitive series like we talked about earlier. So. All right, anything else we need to hit on before we get out of here tonight?
If that's the case, just remember, I picked the Warriors to win it, and you picked the Bucks, I think.
I think you might be right. So I'm feeling a little shaky, but, one game doesn't always tell the tale. So I'm feeling a lot shakier than I did 4 hours ago, though, I'll tell you that.
All right.
All right, Jay, to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.